From the land of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 13th day of February 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois, and look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll take you through some not-so-exciting numbers from the USDA and its longer-term agricultural projections. Just a few of them, I'll outline what USDA says the farm gate price for corn will be each year from now until 2023. We'll do that as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Nearby contract in the March futures for the wheat at $5.65 and a half, up 8.5 cents. May at $5.94, that's up 7.75. And July soft red at $5.97 and a half, 6.75 of a cent higher. The hard red July at $6.55 and a quarter, up 7 cents. March corn at $4.40 and a half, a half higher. The May at $4.46 and a half, up a half in July. 4.51, down a half for the afternoon. September 4.52 at a quarter, pinning a half lower. And December corn at 4.56 at a quarter. Your new crop settled down 1.5 cents as well. March contract of next year down a penny at $4.65 and 3 quarters. March soybeans $13.44 at a quarter, up 21.25 cents. May at $13.30 and a half, up 20.75 of a cent. July futures $13.12, up 19.75, and November beans at $11.33 and 3 quarters, 15 higher. January of next year at $11.38, up 14.5. Bean meal futures for the day $4.52.80 in the March, $9.30 higher. March bean oil up 55 cents at $39.54. Live cattle futures finished the April at $142.40. That was up $1.62.5. The March feeders at $170.72.5, up $2.22.5. April's there up $2.20 at $171.60. Lean hogs finished the February at $86.35, down 15. The April at $94.92.5 were up 55 cents. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures on the day, trading the nearby March at $100.27 a barrel, down a dime. RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, $2.76.09. That's up 6 tenths of a cent. Ethanol futures, 3.9 cents higher at $2 a penny and 3 tenths. And the spread between those two is 75.6 cents of a cent wide. That's in favor of ethanol, and it is down 3.2 cents of a cent, or narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $5.18.04, up 3.6 cents, and diesel fuel at $3.03.2 of a cent, up 2 cents for the afternoon. Gold futures trading $1,300.20 as they closed out the day at $5.10 higher. The U.S. dollar now at 80.32. That's down 0.35 on the afternoon. The weather forecast comes from the Urbana-Champaign area for this afternoon. It says we'll see mostly sunny skies and a high of 33 degrees on a south-southwest wind at 15 miles an hour, gusting to 20. Tonight, mostly cloudy and a low of 17. Tomorrow, a 40% chance of snowfall. It'll be mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high of 24 degrees. And then Friday night, partly cloudy and just a low of 3. Wind chill values between 9 and below and 1 above. Northwest winds tomorrow evening at 7 to 15. And then on Saturday, a 50% chance of snowfall. Afternoon, mostly cloudy, a high of 25 degrees. 40% chance of snow on Saturday evening. That'll be before midnight, mostly cloudy and 17. And sunny skies on Sunday with a high of 28. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 22. And for Washington's birthday, on Monday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, and a high of 41 degrees, just a 27-degree low on Monday night, and Tuesday sunny skies and 39. A good start to the work week. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's the 13th day of February 2014. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us. Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd. Today I'm coming from Freedom Hall in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, how has the farm machinery show been so far?
Well, farmers still have a lot of money because it is packed. Well, I think there's every farmer in the Midwest here. It is just shoulder to shoulder going through the hallways, looking at all the different gadgets, the new equipment that everybody's has for sale. It's just amazing. Actually, I'm sitting at a table here with a bunch of WILL listeners, so WILL does reach out. There's no doubt about that.
Well, tell them thank you for listening. We do appreciate them. What's the neatest thing you've seen in machinery this year there? The new things.
Well, I guess size. And my question, as I ask farmers, I ask them, is what size of farmer are they building this equipment for, or multiples of that? I mean, are they going toward the 5,000 acre farmer, 6,000 acre farmer, or 7,000 acre farmer? And then, of course, it would be multiples of that, because, I'm an old enough dog to remember 500 acres used to be a big farmer, and that is not the case today. And nobody can really give me a good answer other than a lot of them kind of feel that you've got to be at least in that 5,000 acre mark to make some of the efficiencies work with this bigger equipment.
Well, they'll have to do some catching up in a lot of the Midwest if that's the case, or we'll have to just build smaller equipment too.
Or use it longer.
or use it longer. Hey, and I've got these numbers later on. Did you get a chance to take a look at some of the ERS numbers that were out earlier this morning from USDA and what their long-term outlooks were?
No, I have not. Oh. I have not had a chance to study
that. I won't talk to you about them because they're low. we'll have those. They all start with 3. How about that? But we'll take those up maybe a bit. Actually, no, we'll take those up a bit later in this broadcast. Okay, so there is some news out of here today, and this 20-cent jump in the marketplace for soybeans. Have you been able to get on the horn and find out why that happened?
Well, I think, number one is demand. I mean, our export sales are way above what USDA has on the books. So either we need to see some more cancellations, or overall ending stocks are going to shrink to unmanageable levels as we go into the summer months, or we're going to have to import a whole bunch of beans from South America. So it's still balance sheet for the most part. I think soybean inventory is out of farmer hands, so it's all in commercial hands now. So there's no farmer pressure or hedge pressure to come to the marketplace. The chart picture is beautiful for long-term moving average traders. It's been long for several weeks, and it just keeps getting longer. So I think you're getting a lot of technical buying coming in now. To kind of verify that the demand has been very strong. And, if we start breaking into new highs for the year on the lead futures, we start taking out 1251, beans has a tendency to move in 50-cent increments. So all your chart people are going to try to take a run at the $14 area. We'll have to see, how that goes. But one thing I have picked up down here at the show is beans, 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 beans. It just seems like everybody's looking at increasing bean acres, moving back to a 50-50 rotation, whatever they were, whether they were 60-40 or 65-35, especially in the fringes of the high productive, you know, black soils of central Illinois and Iowa and Indiana. But so we are hearing a lot of beans being bean talked. So that one's coming down the road. So I think that March report could show some pretty hefty acres in beans. And we may end up with a smaller corn planted number than what everybody thinks at this point.
When you start doing the supply and demand sheets for not this year but next year, what do you think they look like, given the number of bean acres you think might be on hand?
Well, if you know, it's all going to be spring weather pattern, and we got a ways to go to get out of the winter weather pattern, at least for now. But there's no doubt that we're headed to the point where we could dig ourselves a pretty big hole in beans with all the conservation acres, reserve acres that have come out of out of the reserve and into production. I don't know, I think, what does Daryl have, like 7 or 8 million that has come out of production over the last couple of years? So those acres are most likely going to be beans because they're less productive type soils. And then if you get a lot of corn acres that have been going to corn the last few years because of the ethanol demand and the growing demand in the corn market, that switches over to soybeans. We could have a pretty hefty carry out as we go down the road. And it's been kind of my opinion, and this is just a general opinion, is that commodities would lose half their value off their highs that they posted here over the past few years. And corn at a high 8.5, and that makes it maybe 4.25. Our extreme low here just prior to the report was 4.06. But we've moved back into that 4.25, give or take, 15, 20 cents. Beans, if we would lose half the value on beans at $18, that says that we could slide back potentially to maybe $9, give or take 50 cents or 75 cents. But so beans are a commodity that has a lot of downside vulnerability, and the reason they do is that the $4 corn level doesn't work for a lot of guys unless they have land that produces high-end corn yields. So that's why they're looking at beans. They're cheaper to put in the ground, and the last couple of years they've had some pretty good bean yields. So I think that's what's drifting farmers toward the planting more soybeans.
And there won't be other crops that come back into those rotations. They'll stick with corn and soybeans and not look back to other things, for instance, in the South, rice or cotton more likely, or other?
Well, they'll put some of that. They'll see some increase back into cotton, but cotton is one of those commodities, once you get out, you really don't get back in it. It's so expensive to get back in it. And the farmers in the South with the irrigation systems has had tremendous success over the last few years of growing some pretty good yields. And, of course, they've been able to take advantage of the early harvest premiums because we had been in a very tight stock situation with ethanol plants operating. That is fading away very quickly because even with USDA's downward revision of ending stocks, that's still a very adequate number. So a lot of those early harvested premiums that the southern farmers have kind of grown accustomed to on corn may not be there. You may see some switching over to soybeans in that area. I mean, I'm hearing that in Kansas also. Kansas is irrigated. Western Kansas is irrigated. And they're even talking about going back to beans, which is somewhat confusing to me because I talked to a farmer here a couple years ago out in that area, and they said actually corn uses less water than soybeans because you only need to keep the water on the corn maybe during a 2-week period during that critical pollination period, Whereas when you get into soybean flowering, you may need to keep the water running for a month or so. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, to say the least. And, of course, weather is going to play a big role this summer. And you can already see what's happening in California. And that some weather guys are looking for that to spread on into the western Corn Belt. The aquifer is running out of water, and it's going to be interesting times, I think, or let's say the interesting times in agriculture that we've had in the past 10 years is going to continue for a while, and a lot of price volatility.
Hey, thanks so much. Have fun at the machinery show there in Louisville.
Thank you, Todd.
Yep, that is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. He comes to us today from Louisville, Kentucky.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's a number you need to dial right now, 217-333-7300. Two items you're going to ask for at that point. First, you want to buy a ticket to the All-Day Ag Outlook panels. That's over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Almost all of our agricultural analysts will be there. Sue Martin is coming in for the day. So will be Murray Wise. You'll want to be there to see what land values are going to do and see what the price of grains and oil seeds are going to do in the coming year, what the collective wisdom of all our analysts might be. The All-Day Ag Outlook, for the $30 charge for the ticket, you get all of that, plus a continental breakfast, a Beef House lunch, and a brand new 25th anniversary All-Day Ag Outlook hat. We've never had an All-Day Ag Outlook hat. This is the very first one, and it's the 25th anniversary of this event. If you've never been before, this is a fantastic program. Our All-Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 4th. Buy your ticket today at 217-333-7300. That's the first thing you're going to ask for when you dial that number. The second thing you'll ask for is whether or not you can still go on the John Deere bus trip, March 10, 11, and 12. And the answer is yes, of course, for about $550 per person. Double occupancy. We'll be headed to Moline and Waterloo, where we'll watch the combines and the tractors being made. Go to the pavilion, the museum, and the headquarters. In fact, we're going to have lunch there at the headquarters. Should be a great 2.5-day trip. We'll leave late on Monday afternoon after I finish this program and return on Wednesday evening, about mid-evening or so. So you should have time to get back to wherever you want to make it to that evening. And certainly you'll have plenty of time to make it here to Champaign when we depart for the bus trip, March 10, 11, and 12. If you live north of us, we will do a pickup in Peoria. And if you just want to meet us in Moline, you can do that too. It's all for $550 a person, 217-333-7300. Call right now and book your seat on our Follow the Corn John Deere bus trip. Now, up next, you know, this morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released its long-term projections through 2023. I just want to give you one set of numbers. This is the farm price for corn over those years. For the 2012 crop, that would be $6.89. For last fall's crop, $4.50 at the farm gate. For the 2014 crop, that's the one you haven't planted just yet, $3.65, 2015 at $3.30, 2016, $3.35 a bushel, 2017, $3.45, 2018 at the farm gate, the cash price projected at $3.60, $3.75 in 2019, $3.85 in 2020, $3.95 in 2021, $4.10 in 2022, and $4.20 on average in 2023 per bushel at the farm gate. That's one set of numbers. There are a whole bunch more to come out next week during the Ag Forum, and they'll have a better outline of what things will look like for this year. Remember, these numbers, the ones I just presented to you, are a longer-term outlook, and they're based off information that is now 3 months old. Now let's take a look at what the cash grain market looks like for the day. On the phone line is Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going really, really well. Tell me about cash grain in the area, what basis looks like, and how you see the market unfolding in the next couple of weeks.
Well, basis is still hanging in there pretty good on the cash side. I mean, we've seen a couple of different outlets here and there that might have weakened just a little bit. For the most part, you know, it's still hanging right in there. We're bidding 11 under locally, so you know, that's pretty good for this time of year yet.
Do you expect the basis to continue to stay this strong over the next month? Because 11 under really is, it's a strong basis.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I don't know that I expect that. I think at some point, you know, a lot of grain is going to start hitting the market. And I know, you know, here in the last week or so, we've seen a couple of these days where we had a little pop-up, a lot of offers get filled. And, you know, by all means, I think there's still a little bit of chance that we're going to have a fair amount of a weakness in here. But, you know, I think that whenever the grain really starts moving, that's what's going to happen. But, you know, from our perspective, we're asking guys, you know, just keep an eye out for any basis pops. If you have any more chance at a weather scenario, you know, where you can get a quick ship price in there. And that's what's been amazing is we've still had quick ship prices into the middle of February. But who knows? I don't really see that happening moving forward, especially if the weather's cleared up.
What's your view of demand by sector? Livestock, ethanol, exports?
Well, I think that, you know, my feed and residual usage demand might have been shaved back just a little bit from the last quarterly stocks number. I think looking forward to it. As far as ethanol goes, it's been pretty strong, but it hasn't quite been meeting our expectations as to what they've been forecasting we were going to have. So, you know, every week we've just been coming in a little bit lower here, but then exports have been fantastic. So, in my opinion, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag, but by all means, our usage is still very good.
And when you look out at the soybeans at this time, what's basis look like?
Well, basis is still pretty decent for beans. You know, we're running 8 under locally, and, you know, again, this time of year, wow, you know, that's pretty good. So, you know, to me, there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But, you know, in certain areas, I don't think there's a plethora of beans out there. You know, there's a lot of guys that have, relatively speaking, you know, the ownership on beans is substantially less than what there is of corn. And so, you know, to me, that's something to kind of keep an eye on.
I understood basis being strong as we were ramping up ethanol usage and trying to put enough corn in the ground to meet that. But it seems to me that we're back at what will be the new norms. But these are different new norms for basis. Do you have any good explanations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's a new norm. I think, to me, you know, the supply line was just completely empty, you know, going into fall this past year. And it seems like there's been times where we thought that we were able to kind of fill that. But then, you know, you get like a couple days of tough weather here in January and then February, and then all of a sudden, wow, you know, bang, it goes right back up. And to me, I think that, you know, while we might be around a little bit tighter basis levels than historicals would suggest, I think that if we get into a big crop pattern this year, I think that we all need to understand that this basis situation could reverse itself fairly quickly. We did have a big crop last year, but I'm saying we throw a big crop, as in, you know, like a 165, 170 national yield on decent harvested acreage. And watch out, because the basis is probably going to fall apart.
Thanks much, Matt.
Hey, thanks.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us to talk about the cash grain market on Thursday afternoons. Back with the weather in 2 minutes.
It's National Tortini Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Jeremiah Bailey received a U.S. patent for the first practical grass mowing machine. It was horse-drawn, and the movement of one of its wheels turned gears to spin a vertical shaft with cutting blades. The machine could mow up to 10 acres a day, and it was featured in Mechanics Magazine in 1823. In 1851, George Brown Good was born. He was the editor of the Fisheries and Fisheries Industries of the United States, while deputy commissioner of the U.S. Commission of Fish and Fisheries. The study attempted to catalog the state of the American fisheries at the time. It described a significant part of the marine environment, with 532 etchings of marine mammals, fish, and shellfish, and it also illustrated fishing vessels, gear, methods, and processing. In 1910, William Shockley was born, an English-American engineer and teacher. He was a co-developer of the transistor, which ushered in the age of microelectronics. And in 1933, the House of Commons defeated a bill that would have prohibited the sale of alcohol in the United Kingdom. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago is with us. Mike, it's a little warmer today than it has been, and if I see things correctly, it looks like we'll get a dusting of snow here in the Midwest and our part of the world over the weekend, and then by the time Monday comes around, even warmer temperatures. What do you see?
Well, that sounds about right. We do have a few weak systems that will move across the Corn Belt over the next several days and really over the next week. So we'll see periods of light rain and snow at times, but we don't see any major storm systems for at least one more week. Part of the reason that we're seeing these areas of light rain and snow is, like you mentioned, we do have a very large warm-up that will take place here in just about 3 or 4 days from now. So we'll see much of the Corn Belt turn unseasonably warm, at least for a few days. Had there been no snow on the ground, we would easily be forecasting high temperatures in the 50s, maybe even 60 degrees in parts of Illinois next week. But the problem is that we have all of this snow on the ground, and snow keeps temperatures colder than would otherwise occur because all that warm weather is essentially wasted melting snow. So temperatures in the 30s and 40s will be much more common, but that's a big improvement from where we've been. Keep in mind, though, that this is not a large-scale pattern change. We think that this is more than likely just a period of warmth, and a needed one at that because it's been so cold, but a period of warmth within a cold pattern, because we can see that as we move into late next week and next weekend, it's very probable for a similar type of pattern to return, the big difference being that the intensity of coldness will not be as great because we'll have less snow on the ground, and simply because we're getting close to March. It's hard to really keep temperatures this cold when you're approaching March.
Does this have an impact on either the soft red or hard red winter wheat crop in terms of potential trouble in the next 2 weeks?
We don't have any real large concerns for either of those crops, though there can be an argument made that parts of the southern plains are too dry. Oklahoma and Texas in particular would benefit from a widespread rain or snow event, even though they just had one. They still need more. So that is one thing to monitor, and we don't think there's very good rain chances out there for at least 1 to 2 weeks. So that might be something that comes up later in March. That'll be something to follow. The other item to follow related to wheat is that it is a bit wet in parts of the Corn Belt and in the eastern and southeastern U.S., including some of the soft red winter wheat areas. It's hard to get real excited about a wetness issue in February, but that's something else that we're watching. But at this point, overall, we still have time for things to improve. We can get a wetter pattern in the plains and maybe a drier pattern in the eastern U.S., and hopefully that will happen, and then we'll have a good wheat outlook to continue.
A quick word on Argentina and Brazil, please.
Well, Brazil is turning much wetter after a 3 to 4 week period of fairly intense drying, so it will improve there as far as rainfall goes. The impact of that weather on crops is debatable because they're in all kinds of different phases of crop development, with first crops being harvested and second crops being planted, and some of the different planting dates really come into play here. That's in Brazil. In Argentina, it's been unseasonably wet over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we think there'll be a few more chances for rain over the next 7 to 10 days, so the wetness will continue there. Whether or not there's too much wetness is debatable, but it would be better if there was some drying in that region.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenora, of course, is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.